Well, hello, everybody. Happy New Year. This is Brandon Chow. I am one of the directors of West Coast Creative Salon. And I'm here in the studio today with Diz McGruber, also a director at West Coast Creative Salon and a great friend and colleague. We figured we would do this brief episode today just to talk a little bit about what our year has looked like in review, and also what kind of projects we're excited for, both individually and collectively, in the salon in the new year. For those of you who aren't aware, our salon meets on the second Sunday of every month, where we basically have two mandates. The first one is to support the growth and development of artists in their semi-professional and professional careers. And recently also, our second mandate of interest has been to broaden the interest in arts, not only within the arts community, but also in the public who are interested in various types of arts, be it music or visual art, fashion, design, any other kinds of ways of creating and media for creating. Before we begin our podcast, I would like to mention and acknowledge that we meet as a group and are hosting this recording on the traditional unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. Diz, so great to have you in the studio today.
Thanks so much. Yeah, it's awesome to be here.
You know, for some of you listening, we have a real variety of different artists involved in our salon discussions, and Diz has a very unique history as a glitch artist. Diz, do you want to tell me a little bit about what glitch art is and how you started to become involved in it?
Yeah, glitch art to me is a little bit different than, I guess, the umbrella term. The umbrella term of glitch art just kind of encompasses any sort of misdirected signal that could be through corrupting software, corrupting files on a computer, all the way to rewiring and redoing the electrical in an electrical device. It's just about kind of making sure the signal doesn't reach its intended goal and instead gets kind of misinterpreted or affected in some way. Glitch art for me is a file corruption that I actually do through audio programs. Mostly my process involves editing photography through audio programs and text editors. And that's what glitch art is for me.
Yeah. So you have an idea or an interest in terms of breaking structures that have previously existed. Is that kind of your intention? Deface previous media.
Conceptually, for me, glitch art is a destructive process. It's almost working with the computer to destroy files that should be not destroyed, or the computer is trying its hardest not to have destroyed. Computers are always trying to interpret things properly. So confusing that or disrupting that process is my main goal. I've started using kind of a humanizing comparison or metaphor for it, or simile for it, where it's almost like you're stabbing somebody who's trying to do their job. And no matter how much you stab them, they just try to do their job harder and harder. Because you get this kind of push and pull with the computer when you're editing photography as audio information, where the computer wants to not give you a result. It wants to just say the file's broken and shut down. And there's a lot of encoding and reading that encoding that goes into making sure the computer complies with what you want it to do.
And is that at all something where you're trying to highlight a greater social or political role to the nature of defacing previous existing structures?
I think that a lot of this comes from kind of a disposition with authoritative structures and a disposition with convention, even, or a disposition with the status quo of societal norms or conventions. I think this helps kind of provide a beautiful ugly that we don't get in society very much anymore, especially as like technology improves and improves and improves. We're no longer seeing these like little flaws and, or even recognizing the flaws as beauty anymore. We're just seeing them as flaws. So,
So there's no, in your work, there's no hierarchy really between a disordered work and a work that has the potential to be recycled and reinvented.
Oh, no, not at all. No. Yeah.
Okay, well, it's interesting to hear about that. And one thing that I've always wondered, and I think I've asked several times in our salons, is this idea of when you glitch the text file associated with an image,
mm-hmm.
You're not always entirely sure what the outcome will be from
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you enjoy, is this idea of trying things and not knowing exactly what you're doing to the image, or is it frustrating in that you can't predict exactly what you can do to or how you can manipulate the medium, I guess?
Yeah, no, my background's in video and photo production, and I got sick of the control factor in that. For years, I was editing portrait photography, dance photography, just at times athletes at the height of their game, and no matter how perfect the photo was or how representational it was of the moment, I was constantly having to airbrush things and peak colors and just make sure it looked extra perfect, whatever that may or may not mean. And that pushed me to a point where I kind of was like, how do I just rip this thing apart? How do I get inside the photo and like pull it apart from the inside out? I was kind of like pushed from through perfection. I was pushed to destroying things because it gets a little weird at this point, because oftentimes the photos I was editing were, like I said, of very high ranking athletes or professional dancers who are very good at what they're doing already, and I'm somehow having to point their toe a little more, and I'm somehow having to bend their leg a little, like airbrush around the leg. And so that really pushed me to be as honest as I could be, and I feel like going the extra step and actually like showing you the guts of the file is that extra step of honesty, is that extra step of like, look, I'm showing you everything.
So there's a degree of vulnerability not only in what you're making but also in the process that you use to make it.
Absolutely.
You don't have a total control over exactly what the outcome is some of the time.
Yeah, well, and not only do I not have control, but I'm leaving it very open to people not understanding what they're looking at a lot of the time, because these broken structures aren't ever kind of seen as like the intent, right? They're only seen as error, only seen as flaws. So I'm hoping the audience is receptive to that, you know, and open to the idea that this is art too.
So, Diz, I think 2023 has been a pretty eventful year for our salon, both becoming a nonprofit and several different activities that all of our members have been up to. Can you tell me a bit about the highlights that you had in 2023 and what you enjoyed the most?
In the highlights for this year, number one is us becoming a nonprofit. That was huge for me. I was very excited about that. It means we can apply for grants. It means we can start moving forward as a group, which is very nice. I was also made the curator and event manager for Braid Studios and Gallery, which was very exciting for me. I've been working with the gallery for 7 years now, and this is a really cool experience to make my mark on not only like the local art scene, but to to really get face to face with people I would not have opportunities to be face to face with in the art scene as well. I've talked to many gallery owners who have been excited to check out the new space. And I've talked to many people like within the local arts community that are just excited I'm there. So it's been that has been huge for me. And I guess the number three highlight, and I don't know where to rank this in 1 to 3, but I curated the biggest show I've ever curated. I curated a show called Stuntwood this year. It featured 27 different artists, 20 local artists, and then 7 featured artists. The 7 featured artists were all skateboarders who also did artistic practices. And the 20 local artists are local artists who have been impacted or have wanted to make their mark in skateboarding in some way or another. So I had local artists art on skateboards, whatever that may be. We had some boards carved. We had some boards, we literally had 3D models attached to boards. We had many boards painted. Yeah. And then the featured artists were a diverse group of skateboarders who do insanely diverse art. We had Steve Size. He's a legendary pro skateboarder from California, pro for Powell Skateboards. He is a large scale painter. We had a ton of his paintings. We were very lucky actually to get those paintings because he was only in town for 2 weeks before going back down to Palm Springs for another show. So we have many large scale paintings from him in the gallery. We have skateboards from the Devil's Toy Company. They create replica skateboards from the 1960s out of found wood, hand-carved boards, driftwood. They will just, any sort of reclaimed wood or found wood that they can make a board out of, they will. They use authentic clay wheels. So just really cool to the history of skateboarding.
Can you tell us a bit more about the context between co-evolution, I guess, of skateboarding and glitch art and visual art as a medium? Because it seems at the beginning like an unlikely combination of these two things, but it sounds like many people practice these two areas at the same time.
Yeah, skateboarding in my mind, it's I guess been sportified or gamified since I started skateboarding. But skateboarding to me has always been an artistic practice. It's always been a performance art. It's always been a lifestyle. It's always been a way of thinking, of being. It's a community in itself, very much like the art community, with very diverse groups of people, seems to be somewhat insular, where you can always kind of spot an artist or you can always connect with another artist. Skateboarding is very much like that. And I think it's just a natural coming together of both those communities, because even early on when skateboarding was invented, it's a creative invention, because you essentially took roller skate wheels and attached them to a 2x4 and then were like, why don't I just ride this down the street? So you had to almost see two things that were already made and realize they could be a whole new thing. So skateboarding in itself is a little bit of an art, just the fact that the board was put together. It took an artistic eye or a creative eye to like meld those two objects, kind of thing. But then as skateboarding progressed, people started painting on the wood to individualize themselves. People started to create their own graphics on these boards they were making. And as the commodification of skateboarding grew, as the business of skateboarding grew, brands that were producing quote-unquote professional skateboards, they needed some way to like brand themselves or stand out or just be distinct. So immediately skateboarders teamed up with artists to create these series of graphics on boards, and I think that has pushed the artistic inspiration in skateboarding ever since the 60s.
So it sounds like in some ways that skateboarding can be a great way to disseminate the arts and vice versa as well. The the artistic community would be kind of well situated to consider the vibrancy of skateboarding culture as an inspiration for what they're making.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And something I've found through my 20 years of skateboarding too is that you're never going to meet a more supportive group of people or more passionate group of people than skateboarders. And realistically, in the art scene, that's the only thing that keeps it alive, is just passionate, supportive people. So people who are engaged and want to be there, you know? So I think skateboarders and artists are the perfect mix.
So if I remember correctly, Stuntwood is still on display. I mean,
it's on display until January 6th. We have our last showing technically on January 6th. It's not an official Stuntwood showing. It's a first Saturday open gallery event. But yeah, January 6th will be the last public showing of the show. After that, all of the boards will be online on the Braid Street Studios website. We could put a link up for that.
So if any followers want to come see Stuntwood, you get your last chance in the new year on January 6th.
On January 6th, yeah. And
at Braid Street Studios.
And if you want to check out the boards after that, they will be on the Braid website, and they will be for sale as well. So they will still be for sale into next year.
Diz, I wanted to ask you also about what you're excited for next year in terms of upcoming projects.
I'm excited for so many things next year. I have three shows that I'm doing with Braid. I have a tattoo show, a sculpture show, and the third show is yet to be decided on. I also am working towards my residencies abroad and or art field trip events that I want to do through West Coast Creative Salon. Those will be trips in which we will have a group of artists go abroad to learn from artists elsewhere. And based on our experiences there or our learning, we will create something from that. So that project's huge. The three shows I'm doing with Braid are huge. And I really do want to get an exhibition together of salon members. That's a big focus for me as well.
That would be a very exciting way, I think, to start off the new year. So
absolutely.
Diz, where can people find your work and more about you if they're interested? We already mentioned Stuntwood.
Yeah, no, you could go to my Instagram. It's just instagram.com/DizMacGruber, DizZZMCGRUBER. And that is the best way to see my work right now. I don't know. We don't have profiles on the website, do we?
We have small profiles.
We have small profiles on the website, so there's that.
Yeah, short bios, and there's also links to Instagram there.
Well. Right. Yeah. So yeah, my links are there, and yeah, that's it.
Great. Well, thank you for joining us today, everyone. We're wishing you all a happy, productive, creative, and peaceful 2024. And we hope you learned something today. And take care.